Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It's so cool that you decided to join me again today. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today founded Betterment in 2008 after working as an advisor to Wall Street's biggest financial institutions. Wanting to create a more convenient way to invest, he started Betterment to reinvent the investment industry. It wasn't long before his vision became a reality as the company won TechCrunch's Best Startup in New York Award in 2010. My guest is an economics graduate of Harvard University and a finance graduate of Columbia Business School. He says his interests lie at the intersection of behavior, psychology, and economics, and he gets excited about making everyday products accessible and efficient. Now, let's hack John Stein. I want to thank the sponsor of Hack the Entrepreneur, FreshBooks, for making my life easier and my business profitable. What is the one thing that I'm not good at? I am horrible at staying on top of my bookkeeping and accounting for my business. FreshBooks is designed for small business owners just like you and me. The FreshBooks app for iPhone and Android devices makes it dead simple to keep control of my expenses by allowing me to take photos of receipts as soon as I get them, and therefore before I lose them. To start your 30-day free trial today, go to freshbooks.com/hack. And don't forget to enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Welcome back to Hack the Entrepreneur. We have a brilliant guest today. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here with you.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. All right, John, let's jump straight into this, shall we?
Great.
John, can you tell me, as an entrepreneur, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Yeah, should I start with a little bit of what we do at Betterment, and then that'll be a nice transition in?
Sure, let's do it.
Betterment is an online financial advisor. We manage your money for you. And most customers come to us at the recommendation of a friend or family member, and then they tell us about their goals, that is what they're saving for, whether it be retirement or something else. And based on those goals and the time horizon to those goals, we create portfolios for them and then manage those portfolios over time for the best expected returns, net of risk, net of taxes, net of behavior, all the kinds of typical drags and costs that one incurs when investing. So we really try to optimize for the lowest of all those. This is a hard thing to do. There's a lot of really smart technology involved that we've been working on for years and years. And I started this company over 6 years ago. And, you know, you asked what is the most important thing that I do that's contributed to my success. And I have to say, you know, looking back over the last 6 years, it's been really understanding what we do at a deep level, from talking to customers firsthand to understand their needs. Even today, I respond to customer emails myself. I was just going through and doing that when we got started. And doing the coding myself. You know, I taught myself to code so I could build the site, so I really understand that. I have a CFA, so I understand deeply the investing side of things. All the pieces that one needs to build this kind of a product, as complex as it is, I've at least gotten into myself. And I call that having an engineering mindset and really wanting to get in and try and solve a problem and understand the question from a first-person perspective. And to me, in all these different areas, that's been incredibly helpful, having that engineering mindset.
That's excellent. And how do you, though, as a founder and CEO of Betterment, which is a large company at this point, how do you want to be looking at, you want to be answering customer emails, you want to be looking at product and stuff, but at some point you have to be CEO too, right? So how do you sort of decide, okay, I can't do this anymore. I really just have to do CEO things and help this business propel forward.
Yeah, time management is a never-ending challenge for me. And there are many people out there who've written, you know, very smart people who write books about management. people like Andy Grove and High Output Management, for example, who will say that time management is perhaps the most important skill for an executive to have. And in Andy's case, he talks all about how you want to get the highest return on your time. And that means doing high leverage activities, doing the things that will affect a lot of people and improve a lot of people's behavior in the organization, or rather affect one person for a long period of time. So really making sure that you're doing those high leverage things. I do this too. I mean, I think a lot about my own priorities all the time. And I say that the things that I'm focused on are hiring, making sure we have the right people in here, telling the story, that is talking about the company vision, talking about the company priorities, the roadmap, setting all of those things, and then making sure that we have the right organization here. Once we have the vision in place, once we have the right people in place, that we have the right process and organization to be able to support them, empower them to make good decisions and to execute in an aligned way according to our vision and on behalf of our customers. So I think about those things, those three areas of the organization, the hiring, and the storytelling. And if I'm not doing something that helps those things, that helps me set the vision, helps me understand, you know, I could probably find a higher leverage task to do, a more valuable thing to be doing with my time.
I'm fascinated by your storytelling as a company, especially in like finance. It seems to really, I mean, you come from some markets and storytelling is, that's all everybody talks about. You have to do it and people really embrace it. But in finance, I don't see it. And it's one of the first things I noticed on your website was the story of the company. And it's just, everything's kind of interwoven into it. And it's amazing. And it's powerful for you, obviously. But how did that come about? Like, was this something that you knew you needed to do or wanted to bring from like a business you saw in another market? Or how did you come up with this?
I found everyone asking me, why did you start this company? What made you want to go into finance, which is kind of a, you know, it's not the sexiest industry oftentimes. And why now? Why investing? And to me, that telling that story is something that everyone wants to hear. And it feels important to them to know what are our motivations. And I think the reason is that there have been a lot of companies in finance that are not very well aligned with their customers. And as a result, they have conflicts and often will try to push more complexity just to charge more fees, for instance, or they'll encourage customers to do the wrong types of behaviors because it's more profitable for the company, even if it's marginally less profitable for the customer. And so I saw a lot of this in my career working and consulting for some of the country's largest banks and brokers. And I knew that I wanted to start a company and I wanted to start it in a way that was aligned with customers. And I think hearing that story and understanding those motivations is important for people. And it's important for people here on the team too. It's not just for our customers and externally. When we're hiring, you know, a lot of the team members that we bring on share our passions, share our interest in being aligned with customers, and want to know that that's absolute bedrock for us, because if they're going to be spending their careers here, years of their life, they want to know that they're doing something that's actually making the world a better place. That helps us be more satisfied with the way that we're spending our time. And so we have principles that we are constantly adding to and refining here, but they're the sort of bedrock of our company. Things like efficiency and transparency and being data-driven and evidence-based, and several more. These kinds of principles are kind of the internal equivalent of the storytelling that we do for our customers externally.
Excellent. I love it. I love, yeah, that you want to storytell for your customers and also for internally for yourself. And it's helping you guys grow, obviously. And I'm fascinated by you and your business. The fact that you went to Harvard for economics and then, or previously, I guess, a finance degree at Columbia Business School, and you started consulting for some amazing like Wall Street companies, which is a career path that so many people would just die for and would just put everything into, like you did in school, to getting to that. And then you decided to go and start your own business, which obviously might not be as lucrative, might not be, which obviously it turns out to be, but you don't know that, right? You were on a career path that was highly, highly, highly sought after and respected. It's a bold move to just, I'm going to go start this company because I feel that this needs to be done in the market, or I feel like something is lacking there. It's a brilliant foresight and kind of a lot of guts, I would think.
It was a hard decision and it probably took me longer than I would have liked to make it. I knew I wanted to start a company for a while, but yeah, it's hard to walk away from a paycheck. I used to say that my job was helping banks make more money, and that wasn't a very fulfilling, you know, thing to be doing. And at least for me, certainly lots of smart people and good people do that. But it just wasn't what I wanted to be doing with my life. And so that made it easy in the end to ultimately walk away from that. And I guess I think that I kind of can't imagine doing it another way now. I mean, when I was doing the analysis back then of career paths, I would agree with you that, you know, probably the career I walked away from was more lucrative. Even today, I mean, it's, you know, it's easy to see how I could be making more money working for bigger, more established institutions. But I kind of modeled this out myself, and I drew two lines. I drew a line of kind of stability and predictability and at a high level of income where I would be if I kind of stayed in the path I was in. And I drew a second line lower that would be what I could expect as an entrepreneur, bootstrapping a company, not paying myself a salary for a few years, kind of trying to make ends meet. And yet with more kind of uncertainty in the long term. And I realized I was comfortable with that lower line. Even if the uncertainty ended up badly and things didn't work out, you know, I didn't need to have a super high, you know, I've always had a pretty modest standard of living. I don't spend a lot of money on things. And even in New York City, it's possible to do that. and so I was comfortable with that. And I was comfortable taking on the risk and also the opportunity that if things did work out really well, you know, there might be a great outcome there. And I was happy with that.
And now you're getting to experience that really great outcome, aren't you?
I think we still have a lot of work ahead of us. We've reached some important milestones. We've got the largest automated investing service in the country. We've got 70,000 customers today and growing. We were managing over $1.5 billion in assets for those customers and growing. And we're seeing a lot of great trends. We've got some traction, but I think we're just getting started. It's really day one. There's so much more that we want to do. And we've just recently raised, you know, another round of funding, and we're excited about how that poises us to be a really transformative force in the investing, saving, wealth management industry.
Wow, 70,000 customers. And the online portion of your business, is that, do you think, a big factor in your growth and the fact that you're dealing with some companies that are very, very slow moving, especially to take things online for their customers?
Yeah. You know, I think that the last major bout of innovation in this industry was in the 90s. And we saw a lot of transaction costs coming down. We saw online brokerages starting, real-time trading, all these kinds of things that weren't available before. Before that, you had to call up your broker in order to place a trade. And so there's a lot of investment in these types of platforms, and E-Trade and TD Ameritrade, and even the newer versions of Schwab came out of that era. They all adapted to that era. Today, everything has changed. Transaction costs have gone from, you know, $10 a trade to basically zero. The cost to build a diversified portfolio has gone from 1.4% you'd pay on an average mutual fund to, you know, you can get a totally globally diversified portfolio at Betterment for 15 basis points of ETF costs. And so the requirements of our investing tools have changed as a result. It's no longer about trading. It's no longer about buying and holding. But it's about intelligently managing that portfolio. Reducing taxes becomes a major goal. Helping people make better decisions and looking at all the data on behavior and the loss of returns that we have from bad behavior and the gains that we can get by being consistent and being evidence-based. All of those things become much more important in this world. And I saw that although those companies may be web savvy, they're not the ones leading change. They're not the ones going out and aligning with customers to face, you know, in light of the new realities of low transaction costs and cheap ETFs. And I didn't see the product that I wanted on the market. So I saw an opportunity to go and build it.
Yes. Scratch your own itch. In the most basic sense, always works. And I do admire that you have such a, like, you just love the actual product side of it and making, as you say, everyday life just easier for people to use. And that's great. So can we move on to work? You went through another round of funding, didn't you? In the last couple of months?
Yeah. Last week we closed and announced a $60 million round of funding that quadrupled the cash that we had on hand and means that today we've raised over $105 million to support the company and the vision that we're building.
Wow. That's impressive. And you're the CEO of this company that is very, very new for a financial company. And there must be a lot of growth, a lot of change, a lot of things going on. You mentioned High Leverage and Andy Grove. I want to know, John, what it is you do. Like, can we just go through, say, your first 30 minutes or 60 minutes of your day? And what's the routine that you use on a workday to set yourself up to run this company and propel it forward the way it needs to go?
Well, you know, oftentimes the first 30 minutes of my day are checking email in bed and then saying hello to my 7-month-old daughter.
Oh, nice.
And comes into bed with us. So maybe not what you would expect.
Checking email in bed, I expected.
But, you know, I always look back to my priority list and I keep a document of everything that I'm working on. And as new work comes in, I triage it and it either gets, you know, I manage toward inbox zero and I manage toward a list of responsibilities at zero. And I try to put the most important things at the top and work through them in priority order all day long. Much of my day these days is in meetings. I have 28 different one-on-ones with different people in the company, not all of them once a week, but at least every month or so. And many of them are once a week. And we do, you know, I'm constantly briefed on what's going on growth and product and all of the important areas you'd expect, engineering. I try to attend the stand-ups. I make office hours so that I'm available to the team every day. And then, you know, early morning and late at night often find me just catching up on email and all those tasks that can wait a little bit longer. And then weekends are the time that I find to do more writing and reflection and new work because there's less of that inbound triaging and immediate maintenance.
Excellent. So at the beginning, we talked about, and since then, we've talked about all the things you're really good at, from the big things to the small things in your business. And there must be something over the last 6 years of starting this company and running it and growing it that you've realized that you learned about yourself that you were just absolutely not good at on the business side and you had to just push off. Can you think of one of these things?
There are lots of things that I'm not great at or I've had to learn about. I think when I started the company, I thought I would always be involved in the product. Because as you noted earlier in our conversation, I really love that. I love getting my hands into the design of things, whether it's from an architectural engineering perspective of the design and, you know, how to lay out the database. I was big into that. I did all of that originally for the company and was involved in it for a long time. Or the UX design, where we put the buttons, how we animate the summary tab, how the portfolio tab looks. All of those kinds of things I was heavily involved in. And today, I'm not. Today, we've hired many smarter people with better taste who do those kinds of things instead of me and do them better than I would do them. And it was a real transition to get out of that and get away from it. And, you know, and now my job is management. Now my job is those things that I talked about at the top of the show, hiring and aligning people around the vision. And I wasn't good at those things. I had zero experience doing those things initially. So I've learned a lot over the past several years about these areas. And now I love them. I think initially I was intimidated by them. And today I'm absolutely thrilled that that's my job. I feel very fortunate to be in this position.
Yeah. The fact that you are the CEO of this company and you can even talk about UX and button design on the thing is amazing to me. And I think that has a huge, huge, like, value to where you've come so far. And then, like, you take it sort of to the point where you knew it. And then it got to a point where it's like, I need to put smarter people in place now to take over from but you've taken it to a certain level already. You weren't, some people really go in, I think, and don't know a whole lot. And you're the first person who didn't answer my first, what's the one thing question in a very clear, definite way. And now I can see why, because you have or have had your hand in almost every aspect of your business in an amazing way. And I think that's the true value and reason why you've done the amazing things you've done. It's impressive.
Yeah. And it's not that I think I'm the best at all those things. It's just that I love doing it. And I, you know, as I said at the beginning, I think having that sort of engineering mindset of wanting to get in has been crucial to our success. I agree with you.
Totally. And not even that, you know, you're not that great at it, but you're also, it's not because you're like super controlling. You also realized at one point that no, this stuff has to go to somebody way smarter than me now that we can do that. And that's brilliant. Most people just can't do that. And it's really, really impressive.
I say that my goal is to hire myself out of a job. You know, ideally, I'd like to have nothing to do to hire people. So if I see things backing up on my to-do list and they're related, that to me means that it's time to hire someone to do those things.
Yeah, that's excellent. Okay, so let's wrap up then with success in the future. So that's your goal for yourself, is to hire yourself out of a job. You've done some amazing things in 6 years with Betterment. What is it you want to accomplish in the foreseeable future with Betterment?
We want to be the obvious best answer to the question, what should I do with my money? And we believe that employing smarter technology really helps us make investing better and answer that question better. Some of our vision today that takes us through the foreseeable future, I can share with you. One area is around ease of use, what we call immediacy, doing everything faster, making it more seamless, more frictionless from a customer experience perspective. That's an area where we have a real advantage, and we want to keep pressing that advantage. Another is in personalization. And there are 75 million American investors, and there's 75 million unique portfolios and unique goals available at Betterment. Each person has a portfolio that's customized to them in a way that makes sense for their location, their tax situation, their life situation, all of these kinds of things. And we want to keep pressing that advantage as well. You know, a third area is our platform. And we have this great advice platform and management platform for retail investors. And now we're also extending it to work with advisors and institutional investors who have clients of their own who want access to our algorithms and user experiences and so on. And so we've made that available in a white labeled form so that other people can have access to this technology that we've built. It's made us accessible to millions of additional clients that we might not otherwise be able to reach.
Wow. Impressive. And everybody can go find out more about you and your company at betterment.com, right?
That's us.
Excellent. I will link to that in the show notes so it's easy for everyone to find. And John, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you are a very busy person, and I appreciate you stopping by.
My pleasure. Again, great to be with you. Thanks, John.
Wow, that was a fun conversation. John is, wow, he's a smart, smart, smart man. We've had a lot of people on this show that are taking on big tasks, taking on big markets, but John is taking on a gargantuan, the investment, the banking industry, and trying to transform it, take it from its old way of thinking to modernizing it and simplifying its use is amazing. And he's succeeding at it. Unbelievable. What a just a great conversation. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. So I'm looking back, and John said a lot of smart things. He did. There was a lot of things that he said about business and about just dealing with the struggles of it within it. And that were really, really, really smart. But then he said one thing. He said one thing, didn't he, that really, really stuck out. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
But I kind of modeled this out myself. And I drew two lines. I drew a line of kind of stability and predictability and at a high level of income where I would be if I kind of stayed in the path I was in. And I drew a second line lower that would be what I could expect as an entrepreneur, bootstrapping a company, not paying myself a salary for a few years, kind of trying to make ends meet. And yet with more kind of uncertainty in the long term.
And that's the hack. Wow, John. So this is different than anything I would ever do, but this is brilliant if this is what you need. And you'll know if you need this more so than me being able to tell you. But John, being, I guess, of an analytical mind, I mean, and a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant man. I mean, he went to Harvard and Columbia, like, wow. And then decided to, and then to Wall Street, and then gave it all up to start a business. But first, he modeled it out and planned out these two different paths, potential paths. The one of stability, very, very high paying and powerful jobs. But he knew the predictability was there and he knew where it would end up. And apparently that didn't entertain him. But then there was this other path of bootstrapping a company, and not a small company, not a company in a market that is very easy to enter either, like banking and investments. This is very, very, very difficult place to go. Yet he knew that that was the right path for him, that he could afford to bootstrap a company for a couple of years, not pay himself a salary, and still be comfortable with doing it, being comfortable with the uncomfortableness of entrepreneurship. And that's brilliant. And this is completely, again, different than what I would do. And so sometimes I'll advise you to just go with your gut, follow it, just run with it. Quit that job if you have to, do whatever it has to follow it is what you feel you need to do. And this is completely different. And this is completely for people who need that planning, who need those thoughts, like the that analytical sort of sense of it. And I think it's really, really, really important to know that there are these different paths to the same end, but it's, we have to deal with ourselves and know what it's going to take us to mentally and to be able to shift our mindset to be able to take these leaps. And I love how John did it. It's very, 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 very smart. And he's a very, very, very smart man. But I love how it's so different than I talk about, and so different than a lot of my guests actually talk about, how we're all kind of following our gut and just running with it. And John really thought it out, and he's hyper successful at it. And that's brilliant. And I thank you again, John. That was awesome. All right. So this has been fun. I thank you so much again. You have no idea how much it means to me that you stop by and hang out with me for these half hour episodes. I really, really, truly do like it. If you're enjoying the episode, if you are on a Mac or an Apple iPhone, could you go to iTunes and leave me a rating and a review? It would help so much the show getting noticed. If you are of the 50% of people in the world who are not, and the 50% of the people actually who listen to this show who are not on an iPhone, I do not blame you, but could you go Stitcher.com? Stitcher is a great place. Or SoundCloud, wherever you happen to listen to this show. And I would just love a rating and a review. It helps out so much. It boosts you up in the ratings and it gets me noticed. Helps me get better guests for you. And it would mean so much. Put your Twitter tag in there if you could, at your name if you use Twitter. It'd be great if I could reach out to you and thank you personally after doing that. So this is it. This has been fun. I thank you so much again. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.